All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons season finale 34-32 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for over a decade at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, I am giving you my initial takeaways on the Falcons' win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Week 17, their season finale, to get their record, their final 2018 record, to 7-9, and yeah, we'll jump right into it. And I don't have a ton of thoughts on this game at this point. You know, it was sort of the button at the end of the season. And so I don't know if this game really showed us anything that we didn't already know about this team that we had seen in the 15 previous games. What was notable on today's game, more so than it has been throughout the last year plus for this team, is that the Falcons really came alive in the second half of this game. I believe that's now 2 weeks in a row where the Falcons sort of have offenses sort of broken open in the third quarter, which has notoriously been their struggles going back well beyond the Sark era, back into the early days of the Matt Ryan era. And so, you know, looking at this game, sort of the recap of this game for those of you that didn't watch the game, the sort of the summary of this game is the Falcons fell down to a 17-0 deficit in the first half of this game. They were finally able to get a score late at the end of the second quarter and then got another one to start the third quarter. So they sort of closed the gap to 17-14 pretty quickly. Then the two teams exchanged field goals, and then DeMonte Casey got another interception off of a deflection. Dirty DeMonte doing his thing again. That set up another Falcons touchdown, and then they got their first lead of the game going at the end of the third quarter, and then got another score to start the fourth quarter. So they were at that point up 31-20. Then, of course, you know, given it's the Falcons' defense, they would let the Bucs right back into the game. The Bucs matched with two scores of their own. And then, you know, one of those was thanks to a bad throw, which led to an interception by the Falcons and Matt Ryan. That set up a Bucs score, and the Bucs were able to regain the lead 32-31. The Bucs went for two, were denied, offered making a stop. And then the Falcons, or the Bucs went for two twice on both of their scores. I know Alford got a stop, I think, on the first one, and I can't recall who got the stop on the second one. And so the Falcons were very methodical, were able to drive down the ball, down the field, and then sort of forced the Bucs to use all their timeouts and then sort of kneel down to set up for the game-winning field goal. They played for the field goal. And they got it with a game-winning kick from Matt Bryant. And, you know, on that note, sort of where I'll start this conversation for today is talking a little bit about sort of how disgusted I have been with how, in my opinion, how quickly Falcon fans have sort of turned, wanting to turn the page on Matt Bryant after a decade of greatness. And I've been sort of baffled by how, you know, in addition to that, how many people want to get rid of Matt Bosher as well, just to save a couple of million, you know, and sort of been pushing this false narrative that his play has been poor this season. You know, I think our special teams this year has been the best it's been in like 3 or 4 years. Yet you have these people that are out there wanting to blow things up. And, you know, I think that is in large part due to the people not believing in, you know, hashtag special teams matter. And I think sort of the myth that sort of replacement level players on special teams, you know, are mostly fine, which I think is a big reason why the Falcons special teams has been so poor the last couple of years, is they've sort of been in sort of that replacement level player and sort of been asking Keith Armstrong to try to make lemonade out of lemons. But, you know, if this is the final game for Matt Bryant, and for the record, I don't think it should be the final game for him. I think the only way that Matt Bryant is not the kicker for the Falcons in 2019 is if he decides to hang it up and decides to retire. I think the idea of cutting Matt Bryant is utterly disrespectful given what he has done for this team for the last decade. and the fact that there have been really no indications whatsoever that he is slowing down in any way. I know he was dealing with an injury, but you know, that's, he still was great in the 14 games that he played this season. You know, Football Outsiders did a study 3 years ago looking at field goal data going back all the way to like 1989, and they deemed Matt Bryant to be the greatest clutch kicker in that, you know, 26-year period, and, you know, the greatest clutch kicker ever. In my eyes, nothing has changed over the last 3 years to deem that, you know, to invalidate that study. And so the idea of sort of cutting Matt Bryant in order to save $2.8 million against the cap is just downright stupid in my eyes. You know, I would happily, you know, pay $3 million, you know, which is like 1.5% of next year's salary cap, projected salary cap, for the peace of mind as far as the kicking game goes. And, you know, imagine instead of a meaningless game where the Falcons are ruining their draft position in order to finish 7-9, imagine this is a make-or-break game that would have decided the Falcons going to the playoffs, or would have been the difference between getting a first-round bye or not, or something like that. And, you know, based off of certain things, you can argue that it could have been had a couple of games gone in the Falcons' favor earlier in the season, given that the fact that the Eagles were able to be the sixth seed in the postseason, going 9-7, if the Falcons had beat them and won one more game this year, they would have been in the playoffs. More on that later. But, you know, if this is the final kick of Matt Bryant's career in a Falcon uniform, and again, I will reiterate that Matt Bryant is afforded the right to take as long as he wants and needs to make whatever decision he decides to make this offseason. But if this is the final kick, then I think it's a fitting way to end it, for him to hit a game-winning field goal against his former team in Tampa Bay, where essentially his career began. You know, I wouldn't take Matt Bryant for granted quite yet, Falcon fans. You know, the Falcons picked up Matt Bryant in 2009, and since the start of the 2010 season, the Falcons have been the most accurate field goal kicking team in the league. Guess who's been the least accurate team? Tampa Bay. Now, it's not all owed to the fact that they let go of Matt Bryant, but they are related, and they've been struggling basically to replace Matt Bryant for the last decade. And so I just wouldn't necessarily take it for granted that the Falcons can just go ahead and turn the page on Matt Bryant. So don't take him for granted. Appreciate that man. Love that man. You know, that's what I'll say. So we got more to talk about, particularly talking about sort of the status of the offensive coordinators and where the Falcons sort of need to look to address some of their issues that they showed throughout this 2018 season. But since we're going to be talking quite a bit about the offseason in the coming weeks and months, why don't you guys check out the two arguably offseason related podcasts on the Lockdown Podcast Network, including the Draft Dudes podcast with hosts Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino, and the Lockdown NFL Draft podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sickema. You can find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So let's talk about sort of who should stay and go, focusing mostly on the coordinators, because those have been the guys that there has been rampant speculation even today, where people, you know, you saw tweets from various, you know, notable NFL insiders talking about sort of who's on the hot seat between Steve Sarkisian and Marquand Manuel. And, you know, depending on what you read, it seems like Sark is on a hotter seat, is in more trouble. And others, articles, other reports seem to indicate that Manuel's the guy that could potentially get the axe. You know, I don't know if this game really saved either guy's job, but I do know that since the Falcons were able to end their season with a 3-game winning streak, I do think it becomes a little bit easier for Dan Quinn and this organization to sell the idea of both guys keeping their jobs going into 2019. I know one person in particular was upset with me from a recent Q&A where I was sort of wishy-washy on whether or not I think the Falcons should fire Sark or keep Sark. And that's because I don't really have a strong stance in either direction. I think you can certainly justify firing him, I think, just as much as you can sort of justify keeping him. I think the justification for firing Sark is that I think the ceiling of this team, particularly in terms of how good this offense can be in the postseason, is relatively low with Sark. I don't know if a Sark-led offense can produce at a high enough level come January to beat some of the better defenses that you would inevitably have to face if you're going to win two or three games in the postseason, I just don't know if you can rely on him to be able to produce that. And that was something I mentioned on a previous podcast when I was talking about, like, you can have eight or nines as far as your talent goes, but if your offensive coordinator is six, that more often than not is going to come bite you in the butt come, you know, January, late January and whatnot. I think the justification for keeping Sark is mostly due to the fact that the grass isn't always greener. I think you could make a strong case that over the last 20 years, since I've been carefully watching the Falcons, that Sark is probably the second or third best offensive coordinator that the Falcons have had in that time. You know, I think they've had 10 play callers. Sark is the 10th guy to call plays since 1997. And I think Shanahan is clearly number one. And then there's probably a drop off to who is number two. But I think it's probably between Sark and Dirk Cutter, who's that second, and then who's the third guy. And I think it's kind of a toss-up. I think, you know, you could probably make the case that Cutter's offenses were a lot more consistent than the Sark offenses were. But I think you could probably make a case that the Sark offenses have higher highs. And so, you know, whichever one you value a little bit more would be who you would put two versus three. But the difference between them is pretty small in my ideas. And so the idea that if you fire Sark that you're automatically going to get a better candidate in there is not something that I really buy. Maybe you are, but maybe you aren't. And, you know, based off of the, you know, eight offensive coordinators that have held that job prior to Dan Quinn's arrival, at least seven, if not all eight of those guys, weren't better than Sark. And so the odds, in my opinion, aren't necessarily in your favor that, you know, Dan Quinn is going to go, you know, 2 for 3 or, you know, in terms of, or 2 for 2 in hiring better offensive coordinators than what Sark has been. So, you know, for a long time, I believed that coaching is overrated. And a big reason was because of the fact that the Falcons hadn't had, you know, a lot of success hiring great offensive coordinators, because I've been hearing since the late 90s, Falcons fans complain about the play calling and wanting a better offensive coordinator. And so my conclusion for a large part of that time was, either the Falcons have had the worst run of luck in, when it comes to hiring competent offensive coordinators, or the notion that there's, you know, some savior as far as play calling goes just really doesn't exist. And sort of, you know, 2016 sort of shook me of that belief, you know, changed my belief in that. And so, you know, we saw sort of what a legitimate good coach, good play caller looked like in that particular season. And I think, unfortunately for Sark, he's sort of been put in a situation that he has to follow on the heels of that coach, Kyle Shanahan, of course. And, you know, since we as fans and observers have tasted the forbidden fruit, so to speak, you know, everything else that we taste since we've tasted that sweet, sweet nectar doesn't taste as good, tastes a lot worse. And we've sort of been chasing that elusive flavor, as they say, ever since. And I think the reality is that in all likelihood, we'll probably never taste that fruit again. And then sort of, you're sort of stuck in a situation where the team is going to have to try to figure out a way to make do with the fact of what they have currently and try to make the best of it, rather than just constantly hiring and firing offensive coordinators, hoping that you hire the next Kyle Shanahan or someone better or similar. And so for that reason, part of me does feel a little bit bad for Sark, but at the same time, I can't deny the fact that I think if you had an offensive coordinator that was maybe like 15 or 20% better, it would mean the difference. That would be the difference that gets you over the hump between being a team that sort of gets bounced in the second round of the playoffs because you can't handle defenses like Philadelphia or Minnesota, and being a team that is actually legitimately a top-end Super Bowl contender. So I'm sort of stuck in this no-man's land between being very skeptical of Sark, but at the same time knowing it's not entirely his fault. And so sitting here today, I'm not necessarily of the mindset that I'm invested, you know, in Sark or really Manuel or really any coach in terms of whether or not they keep their jobs. Like Wade Harmon, the tight ends coach, is really the only coach that if he was fired potentially today or tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this on Black Monday or later this week, he'd be the only coach I'd be like, what? What are the Falcons doing? I don't understand this. Even Keith Armstrong, the guy who I've gone to bat for more than probably any coach on this podcast, if he did lose his job, it wouldn't necessarily be like a complete shock to me. Not because I think he's done a poor job, but he's been here for over a decade. I think this year he just finished his 11th season as the Falcons special teams coach, and I could understand with that being in mind that he or the team would be wanting to try to part ways and sort of maybe inject some new blood into the team's special teams moving forward. That's a possibility. So, you know, looking back 3 weeks ago, I was certainly convinced that there was a house cleaning looming, but I think sort of finishing the season with three consecutive wins, I think probably will probably prevent Arthur Blank from going all fire and brimstone and sort of pushing Dan Quinn to make these massive wholesale changes to his coaching staff. I thought 3 weeks ago there was a potential that you could see like five or six guys on this coaching staff get axed, including maybe one or both of the offensive coordinator, both of the coordinators. And now I'm sort of sitting here like today, I'm like, I think we'll probably see two, maybe three. I think, you know, I would be shocked if nothing happens. But, you know, we'll sort of see if that prediction comes true today when you're listening to this on Monday or in the next couple of days through the rest of the week. So we'll see. Now, we'll come back to wrap things up and sort of putting a button on this 2018 season and sort of take a little bit of a pivot towards the 2019 season. But I do want to let you guys know that maybe you are tired of hearing me or any other people talk about this football season now that it's over. But of course, you can still get your daily podcast fixed by checking out the NBA shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. There is a daily show devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find out wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So let's wrap things up by summarizing the 2018 season. Let's nail down this narrative because you've heard a bunch, and you know, here's my sort of official one. And I say this, and then 2 weeks later, I'll change it. I'll tweak it. I won't change it. But I think, you know, you can break down the Falcons' 2018 season. The injuries certainly were a major effect. I certainly think it was a significant impact on their start. You know, I don't think if they were healthy, I don't think they would have started 1-4. They could have, but I think they probably would have won at least one or two more games at the start of the season had they been healthier on defense. I think particularly in the Cincinnati and New Orleans games where you were counting on your defense to get some late game stops, you know, not having Keanu Neal, not having Deion Jones, not having Ricardo Allen, and certainly in the Cincinnati game, I know Allen played up until the overtime in the Saints game. You know, I think if you had those guys healthy, you know, two out of those three guys healthy in both of those games, you probably win at least one of those games. So I think the injuries certainly had an effect on the team's slow start. It seemed like the Falcons did get their act together, winning three straight games and sort of putting a button on that. Washington game was probably their most impressive win, and it seemed like they were poised to turn things around and make a real run for the playoffs in the second half of the season. And of course, that was not the case. They started off immediately after that with a very disappointing loss to the Browns game, particularly coming on the heels of that Redskins win. And, you know, at the time it seemed like, okay, well, it was disappointing to see them lose that game, but it could be forgivable because there were some trap elements to that game. They hadn't been great on the road up to that point. The Browns were scrappy. The Browns showed some things that it didn't seem like they were really prepared for. And it was like, okay, they can bounce back at home against Dallas. And that didn't prove to be the case. And then they got dominated by the Saints. They got dominated by the Ravens. They got dominated by the Packers. So for three consecutive games where they got dominated, things turned for the worse. But they quote-unquote figured it out in the last three games, although you could certainly be that guy and say, and it's not like I'm being that guy, but you could be that guy and say that by beating the Cardinals, who were the worst team in the league, beating a Cam Newton-less Panthers team, and beating a Bucs team that was one of the few teams this year that had a worse defense than the Falcons with a lame duck head coach, who as of I'm recording this roughly around 8 o'clock on a Sunday, have already fired their head coach in Dirk Cutter. Poetic justice, as my good friend James Yarko would say from the Locked On Bucks podcast, that the Falcons didn't really do anything, didn't prove anything in winning these last three games. The only thing that they did was basically blow their chance of having a top seven, top eight draft pick. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say if you're that guy, I'm not going to sit here and say that you're wrong for being that guy because I don't really have anything to say to you that says that you're wrong. You know, from a certain perspective, you're absolutely right. The only thing I will say is, you know, good luck trying to convince the people that potentially will have jobs 24 hours from now that, you know, that was all the Falcons accomplished, and they should have tanked and all those sorts of things. Obviously, the people in that building aren't in the business of losing games for the benefit of getting draft picks that they may or may not see, you know, be on hand to select. So, you know, I think that 5-game losing streak had a lot to do with the Falcons offense going from what was a top 5 unit for the most part for the first 2 months of the season to what was basically a middle of the pack unit. And you couple that with the poor defensive performances, that is not a recipe to win a lot of games, and certainly not a recipe to be competitive in games. And I think that goes back to some of what I say of what put Sark in a bad position, because unfortunately for him, he's sort of stuck in the situation where him and his offense is going to have to carry this team because the Falcons' defense has not been particularly good. Now, the hope is that in the future, and by future we're talking about 2019, that will change and it will allow this team that even if and when the offense is sputtering a little bit, that they'll still be in a position to be able to win games. You know, one of the stats I mentioned recently on the podcast was the fact that the Falcons have this really abysmal win-loss record when they don't score at least 23 or 24 points. I can't remember exactly whether it was 23 or 24 points in a game. And that's in large part due to the fact that they can't trust their defense to hold teams to under 23 or 24 points. And again, hopefully that will change. You know, I've been certainly vocal of my skepticism about the hype of the Falcons defense. And this goes back to July and August when that hype was sort of at its peak. But even as someone who's been skeptical of that, I do think, you know, and the large part of reason for that skepticism is I thought this was an average defense before the injuries. And I think once you were eliminating some of their top players and then had several of their other top players, including Robert Alford and Desmond Trufant, not play to their normal play level of play this season. And that led to them being one of the worst defenses in the league throughout for most of this season. And I think this defense does have upside, though. And I just don't think it's probably as much as other people seem to think, as is. I think if and when they get some of their key players back and, you know, healthy, and then can make some upgrades to their pass rush, I do think this is a defense that has the potential to be an above-average defense. Whether or not they're a top 10 defense, I still am not going to quite buy the hype on that. But I think in terms of sort of being a top 10 defense, I think a good comparison is a team like the Saints, who, you know, technically, if you look at certain metrics like DVOA and you know, points per drive or something like that, are a top 10 defense or very close to being one. But I think, you know, obviously we're a little biased, but I know most Falcon fans don't sit here and think of the Saints defense as being a quote-unquote legit top 10 defense. I think that's sort of what you're hoping for the Falcons to be, is a defense that, you know, statistically it's a top 10 defense and is considered good, but isn't necessarily considered one of the best, like, you know, these quote unquote legit top 10 defenses, like a Chicago, like a Minnesota, like a Baltimore, like a Jacksonville, like the Chargers, etc. And when you look at those defenses that are the quote unquote legit ones, they typically check one, if not two of these boxes, and they typically can either rush the quarterback or they play very disciplined. Like, Baltimore is a defense that doesn't have a great pass rush, but they're a very disciplined defense. Minnesota is a team that when, you know, Griffin and Hunter and those guys are going, and Linval Joseph and Sheldon Richardson, they do have a good pass rush, but they're primarily, their defensive success rests on them being very disciplined. Chicago, now with the addition of Khalil Mack, Jacksonville, the Chargers as well, are defenses that are, you know, primarily driven by their ability to get pressure on the quarterback, in my humble opinion, but certainly have some discipline elements to the team. To me, the issue the Falcons are going to have to deal with is they haven't really been disciplined throughout the Dan Quinn era. And, you know, at one point we sort of blamed that, oh, they're just young, back in 2016 and last year. And I think that was a big reason why people were pushing sort of they're going to make the, you know, that ascension narrative this past year. And maybe they will, you know, maybe with more time and more development that some of these young guys that the Falcons are sort of relying on, like Jared and Jones and Neal, etc., will be, you know, become a lot more disciplined players. But, I still remain a little skeptical of that. And, you know, I think when a guy like Deion Jones is the leader, the so-called leader of your defense, I don't know if you're going to necessarily have the level of discipline, because I don't think Deion Jones is a particularly disciplined player. That's not meant to knock him. You know, a year ago, I was using that to knock him on this podcast on a weekly basis, but now I've sort of learned to accept it. I don't know if he can go to other guys on this defense and sort of be the accountability, you know, checker when he's, you know, constantly out of his gap and doing all these various things, you know, still making plays, but not necessarily the most disciplined sort of, you know, veteran player out there. So I question whether or not they'll be able to check the discipline box like a Baltimore, et cetera. So that's one of the reasons why I've been a strong advocate of them upgrading their pass rush. And we'll have to see if the Falcons do that. I think, you know, the last thing I'll leave you with before we close out the show is, you know, I don't know if this is going to be an offseason that's really conducive to the Falcons really making substantial upgrades to their offensive line. The free agent class is kind of thin. I don't think it's a bad draft class, but I don't necessarily know if this is the type of draft class where you can feel confident that you're going to be able to bring in some rookies that are going to substantially upgrade that unit right away in the sense of having some superstars in the making in this draft class. However, you know, I do look at this offseason as one where the Falcons are in prime position to make major, major upgrades to their defensive line. I think this draft class is really strong, particularly from what I've seen at the D-tackle position and pretty good at the edge group. I think the free agent class, from what I can tell, is really strong at the edge group and solid at the D-tackle position. So I don't really feel like there's any excuse for the Falcons to not come away from this offseason with two or three substantial upgrades to their defensive line to the point that, this pass rush can be a legitimate quality, high-level pass rush. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they're going to be the best pass rush in the league next year, but they can certainly be a pass rush that can really put legit fear in that of quarterbacks. And so, you know, I think that if there's one positive to the fact that the quote-unquote tank treads fell off at the end of the season, is I don't think them winning these last three games ruined that chance. And then maybe they don't get a superstar draft prospect like they could have gotten if they were picking the top eight and been in a position to take a guy like an Ed Oliver or Quinnen Williams or somebody else. Now that they're right now, as of this recording, they're going to be picking 14th in the draft. So, you know, losing six or seven draft spots, I don't think it's going to ruin their chance to upgrade their pass rush. It just may mean that they might get the next superstar D lineman that was going to be sort of the anchor of this defensive line for the next 7 to 10 years. Maybe they still get that in the middle of the first round, but, you know, we'll see. So I think that's the last thing I'll say. You know, that's the positive spin I'll put on it. And before we leave off, I know this is the final episode of the 2018 calendar year. I hope you guys have a happy new year. But I do want to say I appreciate everyone that continues to listen and download this podcast, everybody that continues to submit their questions for those weekly Q&As, everybody that participates in and has participated in the fan talks. I believe this is the 375th episode that I have done as the solo host of this Locked On Falcons podcast since the departure of my former co-host, Alan Stark. And I know many of you are skeptical and may remain still skeptical of my ability to sort of, you know, hold the reins of this show on the solo tip. But I appreciate everybody that's continued to listen to the show and continue to give me a chance. And I hope to improve upon the show in 2019. We'll continue to do many of the things that we've done that seem to be the popular elements of the show, the Q&As, the fan talks. We'll continue that in 2019. I hope to continue to get great guests to talk more Falcons instead of you guys sitting here, me saying and you know, for 30 minutes each and every week. And I know one of the things that other various Locked On hosts have sort of incorporated into their shows this year has been sort of voicemails. And that's something I'm interested in doing in this offseason. I think that would be a good opportunity to test that so that you guys could sort of leave your thoughts and we'll play some sound bites that won't necessarily replace the Q&As, but maybe be an addendum to get us some, you know, solid content throughout the offseason when at times where things aren't necessarily going crazy in terms of, you know, having content for every day and topics for every day to talk about. But, you know, for the foreseeable future, we will, you know, fill up January with a bunch of sort of season in year in reviews, and we'll go position by position. We'll pivot towards the combine and talk a little bit about free agency in February. We'll definitely be focusing on free agency in March. We'll definitely get your draft content in April. May, we'll be reviewing the draft picks and giving you thoughts on various picks that the Falcons have made. And then we'll see what happens in June and July during that sort of dead time. But that's where you guys have an opportunity to contribute and provide your feedback to some of the various topics and discussions that you want me to have on for future episodes, and provide your feedback if you're interested in the voicemail thing, as well as other additional things that you want to add, features and whatnot. And of course, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. But if it's, since it's podcast related, just go ahead, send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Locked On Falcons is the name of the show's Twitter page. I mean, Facebook page, I'm sorry. You can send an email at lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So I hope you guys, you know, had a fun 2018. I know the Falcons didn't provide a ton of fun for you, a lot more frustration than fun. But I'm hoping that they can turn things around in 2019. And if not, then, you know, we'll continue to try to find a sense of humor in our frustration over being Falcon fans, if not, as we have done for our entire lives, because that's just the nature of being a Falcon fan. So I hope you guys enjoyed 2018, and I hope you have a great 2019, and we'll continue to do what we do. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.